bbcworldservice.com.
This is the BBC in Shanghai,
Bangalore,
Melbourne,
New York.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.
Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. Thanks for being with me today. So we have a very special guest on the show today. Her name is Leslie Lewis Sword, and she is an actress, a playwright, a screenwriter, and a mother. And she has put together a one-woman show based on the story of Immaculée Ilibagiza. If you don't know who that is, she actually survived the Rwandan Holocaust in a tiny room. She was there for a really long time, and I'm just going to bring Leslie up so she can tell you the story. Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Hi, Marie. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. I'm excited. First of all, I forgot to say, you might be, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You might be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. So, Leslie, you are going to be doing your play in Vancouver.
Yes.
September 8th is the gala event.
Yes, and that's with an introduction by the wonderful author, Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy, Sark, who's written 15 books, but there's 16th on the way, and she's going to be doing the introduction to the show.
Awesome.
Plus a party afterwards.
Awesome. So what's the party going to be like? Sounds like
a
lot of fun.
Well, you know, after a show, what I love about the story that I'm telling, so the play is called Miracle in Rwanda, and it's about the story of Immaculée Ilibagiza, who survived the genocide by hiding in a 3-foot by 4-foot bathroom for 91 days with up to 7 other women and children while killers would roam the house that they were in searching for them. And it's really only by the grace of God that she wasn't found. But what's even more miraculous is that while she was hiding in there, instead of focusing on the screams and the massacre that was happening outside, because as many people know, during the Rwandan genocide, those 3 months, there were almost 1 million Tutsis murdered by the Hutu majority group. So, you know, it was just chaos and death and destruction on the outside. But instead of focusing on that, while she was in that room, she managed to turn her attention to the divinity that's within each of us. And it totally transformed her so that when she came out, instead of feeling hatred, she was easily able to forgive the killers and move on with her life, to the point where now she's living this miraculous life. She lives in New York City. She has children. She tours around the world with her best-selling book, Left to Tell. And she's just a message of love and forgiveness. And so the party, to answer your question, is just going to be a celebration of just the ability, you know, of all of us to focus on what's good in our lives. You know, she was able to find what was good in her life in the middle of a genocide. To me, that is a story worth telling.
And she actually taught herself English.
Yes. Yes, while she was in the room. So the way she did it was, she's a very strong Catholic, and Rwanda is a Catholic country. Her father, the last thing he said to her before he's sending her off to hide at the house of his friend, a Hutu pastor, was pray. And he gave her his rosary. And so while she was in that bathroom, she made a decision. Well, actually, I'll back up. So the first time the killers came to the house, she was so terrified after they left. She realized that while they were there in the house searching for her, it felt as if she was already dying. It felt as if their knives were already cutting into her body because she was so afraid. But she was safe. They didn't find the room, by the grace of God, as I said. So she realized that her mind would kill her before the killers ever did. And that's what I heard her say back in 2005, late 2005. She was lecturing around the world with Wayne Dyer. I heard her say that. And I was so moved by that idea that her mind would kill her before anyone, before the killers did. That's something that I could relate to. I can't relate to living in a genocide. I live a very privileged life. But I can relate to sometimes having such intense negative thoughts that it feels like my thoughts are making me crazy. And for her to be able to find something good to focus on in the midst of that really spoke to me. So what she decided to do was to pray the rosary every moment of the day that she was awake. So that's from 6 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. She just prayed. And it was like mantra meditation. You know, anyone familiar with, you know, or the Buddhist tradition of Zen, you know, it's just single-pointed focus of the mind. And for her, it was the rote Catholic prayers. So anyway, while she was doing that, she started to have visions. And, you know, it was like she was on a vision quest. You know, they were in extreme physical discomfort. 5 to 7 other women in there with her. So 6 to 8 people in a 3-foot by 4-foot space. The pastor couldn't feed them that often because it would arouse suspicion from the other members of his household. So she was in extreme physical discomfort, kind of like a vision quest, as I said. And she started to have visions. Some might call them hallucinations, but I believe that, you know, she was listening to, and I know that you do too, Marie, because this is a spiritual show, that she started to tap into, you know, the divine energy that's around us. So she had this vision. Jesus said to her, "You should learn English because you're going to need it. You're going to need it after you get out of this room."
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And so she said that the next time she saw the pastor when he came to feed them, she said, "Hey, do you have a French-English dictionary and a book in English I can translate for myself and teach myself while I'm in this room?" And he thought she was crazy. You know, they all did. They all thought she was nuts for praying all the time. You know, it's all she did. But it saved her. Not only saved her, but it transformed her. Anyway, so that's what she did. She read the book in English and translated word for word and taught herself. But however, when she got out, you know, she realized that, you know, learning English by yourself isn't actually the best way to speak it, so she had to actually practice. And when she got to the United States, actually, the way she practiced learning English was by watching television, and the Oprah show taught her how to be an American.
Aww.
Isn't that interesting? How to open a bank account, things like that. It was really wonderful. I was with her when she met Oprah. I think I told you that, Marie.
Yes.
And it was so amazing. Oprah said, "Oh, my immaculée." It was just wonderful.
Oh, that's amazing. That must have just been so... Oh, the story is so beautiful. I mean, it's horrific as you're reading it. I cried many times reading that book. But her story of just, it's amazing how she kept herself through it. And you say how, like, the prayer really saved her. And I think it also probably saved the other women who were in that room with her.
I agree.
And kept them all safe.
I agree, because I went to Rwanda to see, I went with her soon after I met her. 2 weeks later, I was on a plane to meet her in Rwanda, where a documentary crew was filming her story. And so I saw the bathroom. It was so small. I met the pastor who hid them. I didn't meet the other women because at that point they'd all kind of scattered to the wind, and you know, and they hadn't really kept in touch after the genocide. I mean, after the genocide, they had nothing left. That was 1994. It's not like they all had email addresses or cell phones. But I did meet the pastor, and what I really got was that Immaculée's... Oh, well, just two things. One, I saw the bathroom, and there was really no reason for them not to have been found. It is really a miracle that they weren't found, because the door is not actually hidden. In the book, it says that he pushes an armoire in front of the door and puts suitcases on top to hide the door.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually the door to an antechamber, like to a mudroom kind of space. And in fact, the bathroom door was not hidden.
Wow.
But it wasn't hidden. It was just behind the door from his room. And what I think happened is that if the killers had ever come in through the back door, they would have seen the bathroom and they would have killed them. But they never wanted to humble themselves and come through the servant's entry. Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
So it's like their own pride hid them from the thing that they wanted.
Well, thank God for that.
Yes, absolutely. Of course. Of course.
I mean, Immaculée's life is not only just her own life, because she has done so much with what she has now and has inspired and changed so many people's lives.
She really has.
Yeah. Sorry, continue.
No, that's true. She's changed my life. I've been touring with this show since 2007, and it's been done on 5 continents for over 10,000 viewers, seeing it live. And everywhere I go, people just, you know, people come up to me afterwards, and like one woman said, you know, I haven't talked to my sister in 12 years, and but I'm going to call her. And I followed up with her, and she did. She and her sister, she called her sister, and they just forgave each other for whatever it was that they thought they had, the other had done, and they just talked all weekend long. And that just really meant a lot to me. Another woman, I just finished doing a tour in the Philippines where, you may know, martial law was in place under the dictator Marcos for, I think, 40 years. And lots of atrocities against people, human beings, were committed under his rule. And there's so much anger by some people who were affected by that. And I met one woman whose husband had been killed under martial law, and she said, and she'd been nursing this resentment against, I mean, anyone can understand it, that she would hate Marcos for killing her son's father, so that her son never got to know her dad. That's the thing that really struck for her. But after seeing the show, she said, for the first time, I feel like maybe it would be possible for me to forgive him. And
Wow. That,
to me, just, that means that's everything for me in terms of doing this show. It's like, if it gives one person the idea that we can choose what we think about, and we can choose how we view the world, you know, then that's really worthwhile for me.
So, Leslie, I mean, this is an amazing show, and I'm going to put the information out there again. The website is miracleinrwanda.com, and the gala opening here in Vancouver is September 8th, and it's running through the Fringe Festival from the 9th to the 19th of September. So if you're interested in experiencing this, it's going to be amazing. If you've read the book, you already know what an amazing story it is, but if not, your life is going to be changed by hearing this story in full. Again, September 8th is the gala event, and the website is miracleinrwanda.com. So, Leslie, how did you, first of all, I'm sure you read the book and you must have been inspired. So how did it become from, what was the journey from you first reading the book to actually having a play and meeting Immaculée?
That's a great question. Actually, I met Immaculée before the book was out. She had finished writing it, and it was in the process of being published. But when I met her, and when I went to Rwanda, and even when I did my first kind of public thing with the show, the book hadn't come out yet. But I had based it on hearing Immaculée speak, talking with her, and going to Rwanda, of course. So the process was this. I went to Rwanda in November 2005, and again, you know, you said Immaculée has changed lives. She, on the last day that we were there, she brought me to the orphanage of Mother Teresa, because that's someplace where she had been helped after the genocide, since she was an orphan. And she was 24 when the genocide happened, but, you know, I think she may have helped with the children while she was there. Anyway, she brought me there just to visit. And I saw this beautiful room full of babies, you know, just these, all these children. And I thought, well, you know, these babies all need a home. And my husband and I, we have a home. And what was interesting is that just the month before, my husband and I had decided that we were ready to start our family. And we knew that we wanted to do it through adoption, because my husband's father was adopted. And in fact, my husband's dad, just, this is an aside, but he met his birth mom a wonderful woman named Mary Boulevant, and she just made her transition this past month. And but they got 12 years, Gavin's dad and his birth mother, together. And I'm just so honored by how wonderful a woman she was, you know, to have given up her son for adoption, but then found him again, you know. And she was just so loving. And so it's really because of her and her choice to give him up for adoption that we decided that we wanted to adopt our children. And anyway, so...
And I have to say, your children are lovely.
Oh, thanks,
They're
Marie.
Just wonderful little,
very
little ones.
Sweet. You heard them on the phone when we were
yes.
Doing our pre-interview.
And that time I bumped into you as you were driving by, and they were like, hello, look at me.
They are, oh my gosh, they are so funny. So I brought them to Manila with me I'll finish that story after I finish how we adopted them.
Okay.
So she brought me to this room. I saw all these babies. My husband and I had already started the process of adopting domestically, but I took some pictures, and I came home, and I showed them to him, and we were like, okay, let's do it. 7 months later, we came back to pick up our two children, Christian Roy Dansan Hamadoun Harelimana Lewis Sword, and Sevilla Joy Inasat Nyokuru Lewis Sword. They are wonderful kids, and they are 4.5 and 5. And so I brought them with me to Manila when I just did the run. My mother's from the Philippines, and there was a wedding in the Philippines, and she's wanted me to do it in the Philippines for a long time. And so I said, okay, Mom, I'm going to be in the Philippines, you know, go for it. And there was a producer who wanted to produce it. And so we had this magnificent run in the Philippines, 10 shows in 8 days. Every night was sold out and standing room only and standing ovations. It was absolutely an amazing experience because it's a Catholic country, so they loved the rosary, and they just really got it. Anyway, I brought the kids, and they just, I think for the first time, really, because normally when I tour with it, I'm only gone for like a week or something, and I don't bring them. They got a sense of what it means that Mommy does a show. And they were very proud of me. So we were walking around Vancouver, I think soon after we saw you, and I had flyers for the new show, and I went to drop them off to some friends of mine on first at like Olga's Nail, you know, the place where I get my nails done, my social club on Sarai Social, which is on Cyprus, and Bloom Essentials, and fantastic pedicure place. You can tell I like my beauty services. So we were walking through around there, and my children decided on their own that they were going to start flyering for me. Okay,
aww.
So they had my little flyer, and they were just handing it out to anybody who would take it. Now, who's not going to take a flyer from a 4.5-year-old and a 5-year-old who are saying, my mommy has a show, my mommy has a show. Like, it was so cute. It was funny. Someone was like, hey, are you going to pay them? I'm like, aww. Yes, I will. I'll pay them in love books.
They are so sweet and adorable. Oh, it's just, it's so wonderful that you've been able to open your home to these wonderful children, and I'm sure they give you so much back in return.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I had a dear friend who adopted her two children, and I saw from her experience that adoption is just, it's just another way to get your children. It's like some people, the baby comes through their body, some people do paperwork to get their child, but like these are my kids, and you know, they were born on another continent, but they are definitely my children.
Beautiful. Well, it's time to take a break already. So we are speaking with Leslie Lewis Sword. She is the creator of the show Miracle in Rwanda, based on the story of Immaculée Ilibagiza, who survived the Rwandan Holocaust in a very special, special way. The website is miracleinrwanda.com. The gala event opening is September 8th here in Vancouver, and then the show runs through the Fringe Festival from September 9th to the 19th. We will be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Strength.
Dignity.
Respect.
Beauty.
Self-worth.
Safety.
Confidence.
Choice.
Hope.
The Beauty Night Society is a registered charity dedicated to helping marginalized women introduce trust, hope, and self-esteem into their lives.
This is the first day of
Through its popular makeover program, the Beauty Night Society has touched the lives of thousands and reintroduced a healthy touch to the lives of vulnerable women throughout British Columbia, creating real life makeovers.
Please visit www.beautynight.org for information on programs and on how to help. Beauty Night, because dignity is beautiful.
I think I was blind before I met you.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with me today. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, and today's guest is Leslie Lewis Sword. She is an actress, a playwright, a screenwriter, and a mother, and just an amazing person. I love her. And she's here to talk about her show, Miracle in Rwanda. If you want more information about it, go to miracleinrwanda.com. Welcome back to the show, Leslie.
Thanks. I love you too, Marie.
Aw, thank you. So, Leslie, I'm curious about Immaculée. I mean, her story, as you said, when she was in the room before she really began praying, that first time that the hunters came looking for her, it felt really like she was being murdered right there. So I can imagine that that's awful. And to be in that situation for 91 days, did she come out with like post-traumatic stress disorder, or was she just fine?
Well, that's to me what is miraculous about this. She had really used that time in the room to transform her mind so that, no, she didn't have PTSD afterwards. She, you know, she was physically really in bad shape, but mentally she was amazing. I mean, there's a story in the book, which you might remember, where, what is it? They had escaped to the French camp, but then all of a sudden, for some reason, France was told to evacuate Rwanda. And so they dropped off Immaculée and the other refugees in the middle of a marketplace in broad daylight with killers all around. And there was no reason for them not. Now, this was towards the end of the genocide and the end of the fighting, but they could have, those killers could have decided to, you know, finish it once and for all, or, you know, and so they were dropped in the middle of this area, and they were told the RPF, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, which is the a group of freedom fighters coming from Uganda, who eventually were the ones who ended the war, and the leader is the one who's now the president of Rwanda, who was recently reelected. They were told that there was a camp, you know, a few miles down the road. So anyone with PTSD would have fallen apart at that point because, as I said, in the middle of a crowded marketplace. But Immaculée said, okay, all of you, you keep praying, and you stay here and keep praying. A bunch of us will go to the camp. And she just kind of set her mind. She's like, she says something in the book like, well, I'm not going to wait around for them to kill me. Let's go. Start walking. And just kind of that force of mind prevented anything from happening. You know, she used Bible stories to inspire her. And for me, it's also a wonderful example of using one's faith for strength. So the story of Daniel in the lion's den, you know, God protected, Daniel was thrown to the lions, and they were like kittens in front of him. So she used that story, Lord, I am like Daniel in the lion's den. And so it's just another example of how staying focused on the goal, not focusing on, you know, the possibilities that, you know, the negative possibilities, but just saying, okay, we're going to the camp. Let's go. That's where we're headed. And no one was killed. You know, so her influence affected all the people around her. And you and I like Abraham Hicks. I do. I love the philosophy of this group, Abraham Hicks. And they have this saying that one person who is aligned with their source is more powerful than millions who are not. And Immaculée really is an example of that. Her mind was so strongly focused by just praying for, you know, every minute of the day for 91 days that she had such a strong vision. And I don't know if anybody's ever been in that situation, but I know when I'm with someone who's clear-minded, it feels like such a relief. It's like, you know what to do. Or when I myself am clear-minded, it's like, I know what to do. And nothing can stop me in that moment. So that's just, it was an extreme situation, but it's one that really brought out the best in her. so not only did she not have PTSD, but actually it ended up working out really, really well for her. I mean, nobody wishes the genocide happened. She doesn't wish that, I mean, her almost her entire family was killed. Everyone, her close family in Rwanda, her mother, her father, her two brothers who were in Rwanda, were all killed. One brother survived because he was in Senegal studying, so he was out of the country. So she doesn't wish, of course, that the genocide happened, you know, and who knows. But because of the genocide, she kind of proved, I don't know, this is not the right way to say it. I was going to say that she proved to herself what she was capable of, but it brought out the best in her in a way that now is bringing out the best in other people. I mean, she's written 4 books now. She wrote Left to Tell. Her next book is called Led by Faith. It's also wonderful, and it lists some of the amazing stories of the genocide. And she's written a book about Our Lady of Kibeho, who is there's a Marian apparition, like what happened at Lourdes or at Fatima or in Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe. So there's a Vatican-approved apparition of Mary that happened in Rwanda. And actually, it was a warning about the genocide, but, you know,
wow,
wasn't listened to. But, you know, there is definitely an unseen world, and there is definitely more than meets the eye. And so Immaculate tapped into that unseen world in a way that just inspires me. I love doing this show. I love it. I can't wait to do the Vancouver show. It's just, it's an honor to get to tell her story. It's an honor to just be her for the amount of time that I get to do it. It really is. It's a wonderful experience.
And so, Leslie, speaking of being her for that time that you're up on stage, what are the emotions that run through you as these killers are hunting her down?
Well, I get to play every character in the story, which is amazing. So I get to play Immaculate. I play the killer. I play the pastor. I play Jesus and Mary. That's fun. So when I'm Immaculate, she goes from, like, intense fear to hatred and rage to transcendent love and forgiveness and joy. Like, she really has, she goes through every emotion in the range, every single one, you know, to blame, to, you know, pain, boredom, to contentment, to, you know, passion. Like, it's just, it's a wonder, that's it. It's a great experience to be with a human being, like, feeling all those different emotions, to grief, you know, to transcendent joy, you know. At the end, she really feels uplifted. I feel uplifted at the end of the show, and I hope audience members do too. In fact, I know they do since I've done it so many times.
And people, standing ovations all the time.
Well, people coming up to me afterwards just saying, you know, that how much the story meant to them.
So. Mm-hmm. And Leslie, as you're playing the killers,
yeah.
What's that like?
You know, honestly, it's fun. It's like, that's crazy, but it is. Because while they are in their height of killing, they are exhilarated. I think they'd felt powerless for so long, but taking this action of, you know, of getting revenge on all the people that they felt had been holding them down, because they were neighbors and friends that they were killing. Like, the killers knew the people they were killing, which is very deep. But, you know, it's like it's like the Wild Thing, not the Wild Thing, the, you know, like Columbine, I guess. You know, if someone has been feeling like they've been oppressed for a long time, when they finally take action against who they perceive to be their oppressors, it feels like a relief. So there's something, and there, what I realize is that it's also very physical. Most of the killing was done with machetes, which is, you know, a very brutal way to kill someone. But it's very physical, and so there's this physical action of killing that, you know, is, as an actress, it's definitely physically very interesting to experience. You know, I've never experienced anything like that in my life, thank God. But to do it as a character is definitely just kind of intellectually, it's an interesting experience. At the end of the show, he's completely, the one killer that I play is completely decimated by the experience, and so he's in complete despair at the end. So that's not, I wouldn't call that fun. But it is, it's interesting to go through that range with the killer.
So it sounds like you're really able to empathize with that feeling, like you said, of exhilaration when of revenge and of taking your power back, maybe not in the best way, but that's...
Yes. It would be better for him if he just, you know, wrote about it. But, you know, that would have worked out better for him because he's still in prison. But yeah, I do empathize with him. I mean, look, some people say, oh, I can't imagine. I can imagine it. There are times where I get really angry. And I don't take action when I'm that angry, thank God. You know what I mean? I have enough tools in my toolkit to deal with myself so that I don't take action. But, you know, I mean, people, I'm human. I'm a human being. Everybody gets angry. It's part of the human experience. And so I can completely understand being angry and wanting to take action in that anger. When I was a child, I used to throw tantrums. I remember, like, screaming and crying on the floor, like, my parents watching helplessly, okay, because they didn't know what to do with me. I remember it. I would get hot because I was so angry that they weren't giving me what I wanted. I was quite a character as a child. But I remember being that angry. And the only action that I could take when I was, you know, 3 years old was screaming and crying on the floor. You know, as an adult, I've learned how to manage those feelings, you know, by writing, by reading, by taking a walk, by going by into my room, being by myself, by breathing, by meditating. You know, there's so many things that I can do. You know, calling someone, reading a book, doing, you know, some exercise. There's so many things now that I know how to do so that I can handle those feelings when they come up. But I understand them.
Well, Leslie, it's time for another break. I'm just, this story, I mean, I'm running through all the emotions right now, too. I mean, Immaculée's story is just so amazing. And what an honor and a blessing it must be for you to be able to play this. And I mean, just you're experiencing so much life-changing wisdom and wonder through this experience. And then
I'm very wise, very, very wise.
And at the same time, you're bringing that to others. So
I do love it. It is an honor. You're right.
Wonderful. Well, we'll be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment. We are speaking with Leslie Lewis Sword. She is the actress, playwright, who has created a story based on Immaculée Ilibagiza's life and her survival of the Rwandan Holocaust. The show is coming to Vancouver. The gala event is September 8th, and Sark, the author, is going to be speaking at that event, and there's going to be a party as well. And then it's running through the Fringe Festival September 9th to the 19th. If you want more information about that, you want to get tickets, see the show, hear more about the story, go to miracleinrwanda.com. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a sec.
Rude boys, don't cry, don't cry.
Rude boy, don't cry.
Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And if you want to hear podcasts and stuff, you can always go to CITR.ca or my personal website for this show and some of the other shows that I host, SpiritualShow.com. That's my website, SpiritualShow.com. So today we're speaking with Leslie Lewis Sword. She is in the one-woman play. Do you call it a play?
Yes. A play, one-woman show.
One-woman show, and miracleinrwanda.com is the website. It's based on the experiences of Immaculée Ilibagiza. And so, Leslie, how did you meet Immaculée in the first place? I know you met her before the book was written, or before it was published.
I went to a conference called I Can Do It.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
You know, oh, aren't they great? So an amazing conference, and she was speaking with Wayne Dyer. He had met her, I guess maybe about a year before, and was blown away by her story and helped her to get it published, and then took her on his lecture tour and gave her, and she would speak before he did. So he kind of taught her how to become a public speaker. And so I heard her speak, and that was in October of 2005. And then 2 weeks later, I was at another conference called Celebrate Your Life, and that was in Arizona. And I knew Wayne Dyer was there, and I figured that Immaculée was probably with him. So I wrote a note to her saying, hey, I'd love to meet you. Because as soon as I heard her speak, I thought, you know what, I want to tell that story. I want to play her, and I want to tell that story. And I wrote a note to her, and then I turned the corner, and there she was. I said, are you Immaculée Ibaguiza? And she said, yes. I said, well, have lunch with me. I saw you in Orlando. And so we talked. And as I said, I organized a Pray the Rosary with Immaculée workshop that next morning after she spoke that night. And there were 15 of us. And it was just so cool. You know, for anyone who's grown up Catholic or who has that in their tradition, it was amazing to be with someone for whom the rosary was not like a have-to or a, you know, kind of a chore, but a really life-giving spiritual practice, you know? And I understand the rosary as a spiritual practice much more now. As I said before, it's mantra meditation, you know? And I was in Rwanda last fall with my children and my husband. My husband was doing a Kiva fellowship, and I was performing the show. And I was talking with a Hutu woman who was not, she was we were a house guest in her home. She was not part of the genocide, meaning that she wasn't the killer. But so there were lots of Hutus who were not involved in the killing, but who also were not, who just were safe, you know, just normal people. She said that during the genocide, she couldn't pray. And I found that very, she said she couldn't find the words. It was so horrific what was happening. And what I found interesting about that is, while doing the show, I've met Protestants who, I guess that there's some kind of a stricture against rote prayer, like the rosary, you know. And what I saw is that there's a benefit to this memorized prayer, which is that Immaculée didn't have to think. You know, she didn't have to think to find words because, as my Hutu friend said, she couldn't find the words. There were no words to say. There's nothing to be said when your neighbors and friends are being killed around you, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. So it feels like there's nothing you can do. She couldn't find the words. Immaculée didn't have to find the words. She'd known those prayers since she was a child, the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, you know, and so she didn't have to think. The only thing, you know, for Catholics, no, the rosary is a meditation. It's a series of rote prayers and then meditations on the life of Jesus. So they're the glorious mysteries, the sorrowful, the joyful mysteries, the sorrowful mysteries, the glorious mysteries, and the mysteries of light are the new ones. In those meditations, Immaculée was able to take the life of Jesus and apply what he did to her own life. So it gave her comfort to know that this guy who lived 2,000 years ago and had this very, you know, intense experience of being nailed to a cross while being nailed up there saying, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. She was able to really dive into the story of another human being and use it to transform herself. So it was very powerful for me as someone who was born Catholic and kind of raised Catholic to see someone practically actually living her Catholic faith as opposed to doing it because her father thought she should or because it's what you do. Like, she was actively using her faith, her Catholicism, to save her mind. And that, to me, was very, very powerful. So when we did the Pray the Rosary workshop with Immaculée, it was just amazing to hear how she thinks about the Rosary. So the show itself is structured around the Rosary. And I really hope that every practicing Catholic who's interested, you know, anyone who prays the rosary comes to see the show, because it's just, it's a very practical thing. It's like, here's how one person used this tool. That said, it's not, you know, Catholicism is just one path, and it's definitely not the path for many people. So the story for me is really about the focus. She used the rosary to focus, but, you know, Buddhists use the Buddhist rosary. And actually, did you know that the Catholic rosary was based on the Buddhist rosary of 108 beads, the mala?
I think I've heard that. I didn't know for sure, but it makes sense because Catholicism, Buddhism predates Catholicism.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how you, I guess if that was the intention, to have it be a meditation. Yeah. I never saw it that way because I was raised Catholic. My mother was Catholic, and I remember her saying the rosary, and it did. It felt like a chore.
Yeah, it does for most people. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It does for many people. Yeah, and for many people, it is a chore. You know, it's like, okay, you have to say your rosary. And that's what was so powerful about Immaculate. It's not a chore for her. It's like a life-giving. It was a lifeline. She made a CD called... you know, where she prayed the rosary with Immaculate, and she says, it's the prayer that saved my life. You know, so that for me was so comforting, you know, to experience it in that way. So maybe, you know what, you and I should, like, try the CD sometime. Like, you'll like it, because it's a link between the spirituality, Marie, that you have found. I mean, this is a spiritual show. This is synchronicity. You know, it's a link between, it's what created that, you know? She does it not because she has to, but because she wants to. So that, for me, was amazing.
Where can people get that CD?
I think immaculate.com on our website. Isn't it wonderful that she has a website now? Immaculate.com. You know, immaculee.com.
And I'll put a link up to that on my website as well as, and up to your website, miracleinrwanda.com. It's so interesting how something, like you said, it's a chore for so many people, and she was just able to find so much joy out of it. And I don't consider myself Catholic anymore. I rebelled greatly against the Catholic Church personally, but I can see how that would be so beneficial for her. Well, obviously.
That's what I find so interesting. That's what I mean about the difference between being Catholic because, you know, it's what's done or because we have to, versus really living the principles that created it. Because at the heart of every religion is the same connection to the divine. And those tools, like the rosary, are just tools. That's it. They're tools to touch that divine within. And so anything can be made into a whip, you know, and everything, anything can be made into a lifeline or a telephone line, direct dialing to the divine, you know. And so for me, I still consider myself Catholic because I just like my mother didn't force me. After the age of 14, she didn't force me to go anymore. I rebelled too, Marie. I had to, you know, I took a detour through. I was like, I went to Sai Baba's ashram in India. I went to, what else did I do? I was into the 12-step groups for a while. You know, I found all different, I was, you know, into Zen meditation and going on meditation retreats and then, you know, all the Hay House stuff, Louise Hay, things like that. And now Abraham Hicks, which I absolutely adore. And now that I'm into, like, the Abraham Hicks thing, it's actually made me more Catholic because I get it that I can take what I want from Catholicism. And there's so much of it about it that I like. I love the smell of incense. I love the kind of theater of the church ritual. Like, if you walk into a church, it's been done for almost 2,000 years, or it's just such an old tradition, you know, like with the robes and the gold and the incense, as I said, and it's just, it's so rich culturally, you know, and I don't have to push against all the stuff that they believe about gay people or, you know, it's like Catholicism is like my crazy aunt. She's nuts, okay? There are many things that, like, she's crazy, but I love her, okay? She's my aunt. You know, that's kind of how it feels for me with Catholicism. There's so much to appreciate about it.
Go ahead.
Go on. I know, say what were you going
to say? Oh, I do love going to the cathedral. My mother used to go to Holy Rosary Cathedral in downtown.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every once in a while I'll go in there and light a candle for her because she's passed on. But it is, I mean, I remember going there as a child, and I would just kind of sit on those, the things that you kneel on when you're praying, and like doodle while I was little, right?
Sure.
But I do remember that, the feeling. I mean, it was like the theatrics of the church, and it's so beautiful and so rich. And when I went to the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, I cried.
Yeah.
It was just so beautiful.
That's right. It is beautiful. It is beautiful. And if we don't push against them the way they push against us, you know, or others, it's not a problem. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you for opening that new perspective for me, because I really like that, just taking what you enjoy about it. And still, you can have your own beliefs and your own moral code and compass and still be part of a tradition.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's some people who feel themselves culturally Jewish more than religiously Jewish. You know, I'm culturally Catholic. And honestly, I'm also spiritually Catholic, because the fundamentals of every religion are the same. It's like love yourself, love each other, you know, joy. That's the foundation of Catholicism, really. I mean, the kingdom of heaven is within. Turn the other cheek. Look the other way. Look away from what's bad. Look towards what's good. Find the divinity within. No one goes to the kingdom of heaven except through me. To me, that means that Jesus knew he was divine. He knew that all is well. To the extent that he lived the most horrible thing any human being can imagine. He died in this horrific, painful, embarrassing, humiliating way, with all of his friends deserting him. And he did it willingly, to show that, like, look, it's not a big deal. It doesn't matter what other people think. This body is not, you know, we are divine beings. It's not just about this body. So I'm going to show you that you can transcend all this. And then, you know, rose again, is like, whether we believe that or not, it's to me, it's just an example of, like, it is, all is well. All is well. That's the foundation of every religion. And so it's like, can I focus on that, or will I focus on something, you know, focus on the differences? No, I like focusing on what we have in common.
Beautifully said, and it's time for another break, so we will be back in a moment. We are speaking with Leslie Lewis Sword. She is the performer of the one-woman show Miracle in Rwanda. You can get more information about that at miracleinrwanda.com. It is the story of Immaculée Ilibagiza's survival of the Rwandan Holocaust and how she was able to save herself and others and live in a state of forgiveness and love rather than resentment and fear and hatred. So if you are interested in seeing this show, again, go to miracleinrwanda.com. The show opens in Vancouver September 8th. It is the gala event, and then it's running through the Fringe Festival September 9th to the 19th. Again, the website is miracleinrwanda.com. Back in a moment.
CITR 101.9 FM is proud to support the Enchanted Evenings concert series at the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden in downtown Vancouver. Delight in the sounds of world music performed in this exquisite Ming Dynasty-style garden. Coming up in August and September, Fandango on August 27th and Plow on September 3rd. Performances start at 7:30 p.m. For tickets, call 604-662-3207. Extension 210. That's the Enchanted Evenings concert series at the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden. Go to citr.ca for more information.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca. And you can find my website with links to this show and Namaste Radio, Illuminating Souls, all the shows I'm involved with. My website is spiritualshow.com. miracleinrwanda.com. And we're speaking with Leslie Lewis Sword. You can find her at miracleinrwanda.com. If you would like to see the show in Vancouver, definitely go there for more information. And she tours all over the world. So no matter where you're listening from, go to her website, miracleinrwanda.com. Welcome back to the show, Leslie.
Thanks, Marie. I just got a text from my father-in-law who said, hi, Pop. I was talking about him earlier, just about how wonderful the relationship was between him and his birth mom, and how her life really inspired me and Gavin to adopt our children, and that has just been such a huge source of joy for us. So, thank you.
Yay.
Grandma Boulevard.
So, Leslie, we're running out of time here, and we can actually go a few minutes later, though, because Scotty's Scenic Drive, it's coming up in a few minutes, but I don't believe Scotty's actually here. I'm going to be running a repeat for him. So if we run a couple minutes late, that's okay. But you were going to give us a little sample of the show.
Marie, I can't run late, though. I have an appointment right after this.
Okay, no problem.
But I would love to, you know, do it again. Yes, I would love to do just a short portion of the show. It works very well over the radio because radio was actually a way that was used during the genocide, both for disseminating, you know, evil information and also for helping them to know that the French were coming and good things. So it was a very powerful force during the genocide. Okay, so this is just like a snippet of the first part of the show. So, hello. My name is Immaculée Ilibagiza. Thank you all for listening in to want to hear the story of how I survived the genocide in Rwanda. As you have heard, many bad things happened. And so some say that my story is a sad story, but I know that there is hope. After all, I was just a girl in a village in Central Africa, and yet here I am now, speaking to you over the radio, and in a moment you will listen to a short part of a play that is about my life. I wish for every genocide survivor to be so blessed. So I know that there is hope. But you can decide, eh? This story begins with Leonard Okuriki Yiniindi. That is my father.
Mwa mishimirwa. Mwa mishimirwa. Hail Mary, full of grace. The Lord is with thee.
Attention! Attention to all who may hear this broadcast. The president of Rwanda has been killed. His plane shot down by Tutsi rebels. The time has come to cut the tall trees. Every Hutu man, every Hutu boy must take up their machete to chop your Tutsi neighbor. All must be exterminated. All.
Oh, Immaculée. Immaculée, come. My beautiful daughter, Immaculée, I've just heard on the radio. It is not safe for a young girl of 22 to stay here at home.
Father, most respectfully, I am 24.
Do not contradict your father, eh? Even if he is wrong. Immaculée, it is not safe for a young girl of 24 to stay here with all of this going on. You will go to the house of Pastor Murinzi. Yes, he is a Hutu, but he is a good man. He will hide you. But of course you are frightened. Ima, here. You take my rosary. And when you are afraid, you pray. Now go.
Yes, Father.
So that's just a short bit of the beginning of the show. And for anybody who wants to see more, to see the whole thing, you can come see me at the Pacific Theater, which is on 12th and Hemlock in Vancouver, And the gala opening night is on September 8th. It's going to be wonderful. And it's at 7 o'clock. Tickets are $49.50. And the first 50 ticket buyers get a free copy of Left to Tell, the New York Times bestselling book on which this story is based. So I hope to see many people coming to see the show.
Beautiful. And I'm going to be, I don't know what day I'm helping to promote the show. I have it
Thanks,
written down
Marie.
Somewhere. but I'm going to be there one of the nights. I don't think I'll be able to make it for the gala event. But if you, it's
you
also,
come. You
yeah,
should, you should come. Yes, come to the gala. I definitely want to introduce you to Susan.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I'll try and make it. So it's also running through the Fringe Festival September 9th to the 19th.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, is there anything that you would like to add?
I just want to say thank you, Marie. You really are a wonderful person. And what's interesting, listeners, is that every time I meet with Marie, something wonderful happens for me. So I can't wait to see what wonderful thing will happen for me because of talking with you today.
Aw. I can rub my belly. Lucky charm.
Well, that would be wonderful. Yeah. I mean, you, Marie, I really am very, it's been really neat to see your growth as a radio host. I mean, the fact that you interviewed Eckhart Tolle a little while back and that you're getting all these other shows, it's just wonderful. So you're a really cool person.
Well, thank you, Leslie, and I feel the same about you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the show in its entirety. It's going to be amazing. There's also a clip of you performing on the website, miracleinrwanda.com,
yes,
as well, right?
Yes, so people can get an idea of what it's like to see one person playing many characters. And actually, this show is going to be wonderful because for the first time in a while, I actually have a director. I mean, it was originally directed by Edward Vilga, who co-created the show with me, and then later I had some dramaturgy by another director, Shelley Williams. But since then, it's just been touring and with me and my stage manager, Gina Castagliola. So for this run, we have a wonderful director, Carrie Vandergreen, who is an actor and director here in Vancouver with Little Eye Productions with his wife, Donna Lee Ford. And he is so terrific. We started rehearsal yesterday, and I'm thrilled with the new stuff that's happening for the show. It's just going to be great. So I'm really, really... Oh, and also, we'll be running at the Arts Club starting at the review stage at the Arts Club starting September 28th. And that opening night of September 29th is going to be a fundraiser for Grace Rwanda, a wonderful organization that's based here in Vancouver that's helpful, that raises money for people in need in Rwanda. So just so many wonderful things happening here. It's really exciting.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Leslie, for being on the show. Thank you for putting together Miracle in Rwanda. And, of course, thank you to Immaculée Ilibagiza for her incredible strength and inspiration.
Well, thank you, Marie.
Thank you, Leslie. Well, I know you have to run off, so I'll let you go. Okay. But it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on stage.
Great. See you soon.
Take care, honey.
Okay.
Bye-bye. So again, that was Leslie Lewis-Sword. She is the creator of the show Miracle in Rwanda. It's a one-woman show. She'll be performing in basically a little square on the floor. You can see what it's going to look like at miracleinrwanda.com. It might look a little bit different in Vancouver because she said she's going to have the director and all of that. But if you want to see this play, go to miracleinrwanda.com. The gala opening night is September 8th, and it is going to be the author Sark is going to be speaking there, and there's going to be a party afterwards. And then if you want to see it through the Fringe Festival, September 9th through the 19th at the Pacific Theater on Hemlock and 12th Avenue. It's in below a church, I believe. So anyway, MiracleInRwanda.com is where you want to go. My name is Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for being with us today. The show is Synchronicity. I'm going to end the show with a song. This is called Madman's Prayer by local Canadian band Makeshift Innocence. Have a wonderful day. Be well. Oh, and next week we're going to have Joseph Joseph Gabi on the show, and he is a local Vancouver numerologist, and he'll be taking calls and doing little mini numerology readings. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for being with me today. Have a wonderful weekend. Be well.
Drive every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.